Going Linux, episode 465, listener feedback.
No viruses, no fuss, just simple and clean. Going Linux, it's the ultimate dream. Forget the crashes and the constant lag with open source. You're never gonna sag. Going Linux.
Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Bill.
Whether you are new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and open source applications and using them to get things done.
If you want to send us feedback, our email address is goinglinux@gmail.com. And we have a voicemail line at 1-904-468-7889.
In today's episode, listener feedback.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, Larry.
How you doing?
I am not dead, so that's good.
Yeah, you were pretty sick for a while, so I'm glad you're not dead. I'm glad you're feeling better.
Yeah, I'm not dead. That's kind of permanent. Yes.
Yeah. But I'm also glad that you're feeling better and you're sounding better.
Yes,
yes.
It's amazing what modern medicine can do when you have the right modern medicine.
Yeah.
So, yes, it was a nasty lung infection that's gone around, and boy, it made me appreciate the breathing.
Yeah, I can imagine with a lung infection.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
So it's going around here up in New Mexico, and you know, working at a hospital. But yes, it just reminded me not to be so lax about wearing a mask. So.
Yeah, when you're working in a hospital, you gotta be extra careful because there's sick people there.
I know. It's like, where do all these sick people come from? It's like we're a hospital or something. Oh,
yeah,
anyway, we are.
Yeah.
All right.
So, anything else going on? Any anything you've done since you've recovered, or it's just been that recent? You haven't had a chance to do anything.
I had a few days where I was actually feeling a little better, and I, of course, thought I was going to stay on a certain distribution, but I found out that I got bored with it, and I wanted to try something different, so that's what I've been doing. So we won't go into details right now.
Okay, we'll keep it a big secret until the next episode.
We'll keep it a big secret because I got some stuff I'm working on that, let's just say, immutable. And we'll go from there.
Okay, cool.
All right.
Yeah, so for me, one of the things I've been doing, among other things, is taking a look at our website statistics. And what I've noticed when I was looking at the end of January, I think it was the end of January, there are at least two websites, both of them are registered with GoDaddy, that are now run by cyber squatters. So somebody abandoned their website and somebody else picked it up. And they have scraped the plain HTML from our web pages and are presenting our content as their own. In other words, they've replicated our website on their website. The sites don't have SSL certificates, so they don't end in HTTPS, they're just HTTP. And the two that I found so far that are doing this, I'm going to out them right here. One is JenkinsDoorsAndWindows.com. Obviously not a Linux podcast website, or at least when it was set up, it wasn't intended to be. But you go there and you end up on their website, and who knows where they put, replaced our links with, but I'm sure there are some advertising links they've added to do something. And then the other one is joyousworld.com.
okay.
Yeah. And they had started absconding with our content during the first 2 weeks of January. So, yeah, weird crapola. So if you end up on either of those websites, you clicked on something that you shouldn't have.
Yeah. So I, while we're talking about stuff, we do have a registered name on Blue Sky, because yes. I did not want people to use it for a malicious content, and there's some things I want to try maybe with it to maybe announce when we're next recording coming out or special information. So it, we do have it. It's going on links at Blue Sky. And that's us. Larry's following. There's only two of us right now because we haven't really talked about what we're going to do with it. But yes, that, you know, you can leave us a message there if you want. But there's not much going on it right now because, well, let's see, because of stuff.
Yes, yeah. But okay, well, we'll include a link in the show notes to our new Blue Sky account.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. So let's get into our first email, shall we?
Yeah, I just got one question for you, Larry. What does JenkinsDoorAndWindows.com have to do with Linux? I mean, at all?
It doesn't. Nothing. Nothing at all. I'm suspecting that somebody had a small business, somebody named Jenkins, who was selling doors and windows or installing doors and windows, and either they went out of business or when they got their SSL certificate, they lost their domain or something. And one way or another, they stopped using this domain. And so now the Cyber Squatter's got it. And of course, they have all the privacy set up so you can't tell who they are or where they're located or any of that. But somebody's got it. And I suspect it may even be the same place, you know, using both of those websites.
Because, it is kind of funny. Okay.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Okay.
Just one of those things.
Uh-huh.
So, yep. It happens.
Okay.
Moving on. Reed sent us our first email. Why don't you go ahead and start?
So our first email comes from Reed, who responded about the Lemur Pro. And he says, Dear Bill and Larry, hope you guys are still doing well and enthusiastically opening the source. One last update about the Lemur Pro, specifically the processor temps I was concerned about in the last email. The Intel Core Ultra 7 apparently tends to run hotter by design, although you find a lot online about concern for temps up to 100 degrees, but it seems that design is meant for that. Okay. Another factor is that I realized I was reading package IDO at 100 degrees, but the core temperature runs about 10 degrees lower at 90 to 91 degrees. The CPU is said to throttle at 100 degrees, but I haven't noticed any effect on speed or usability, and the temperature spikes disappear within a second or two, which would indicate that the cooling is working well. Still very happy with the purchase. We'll update if I notice anything else. Thanks again for your great show, Reed. If that's a little warm.
You think so? I thought they were meant to run in around that 90 to 100 degree range.
Really?
Yeah, just maybe as peak and, you know, cool off when they're not loaded as heavy, but.
Huh. It still seems a little warm, but 90 degrees is about right.
Yeah.
I would think.
Okay, and that's Fahrenheit, not Celsius, so.
Yeah, so I had to sit there and think about that for a minute. It's like, okay, yeah, 100 degrees would be like 200 and something Celsius, and that thing would be melting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think, I don't know what the conversion is, but I think that's what I remember. So we're not going to go any farther than that. But yeah, that seems like it's that now the Ultra, the Intel Core Ultra Pro, that's the new Intel chips that are supposed to compete with the Snapdragons, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Intel has so many different kinds. I mean, my laptop, my old one was a Core 2 Duo or Core 2 something. And uh-huh. The one on this laptop is an Intel Evo i7. I don't even know what an Evo is, but it's here. Yeah, and they have code names for them as well. I mean, mine is a Raptor Lake, but, you know, they have... basically, as I understand it, they make the same chips, but then they enable and disable features on the chips programmatically to make them different so that they can sell them at different price points.
Okay, it seems like a lot of work for...
Yeah, but, you know, it's a lot easier to program, you know, a ROM than it is to actually a physically different device. So it kind of makes sense from a manufacturing perspective.
Yeah, I guess it does in a way, but it's just like...
Seems like cheating.
It does seem like cheating. It's like, if it could do it, just let me do it with the chip. Yeah. I understand why they don't, but some of these chips have like more performance versus economy cores and everything like that. That always kind of baffled me. But anyway, enough with that. So we got one from George, didn't we?
Yeah, we got more than one from George.
Oh, do we?
From Tulsa. Yep.
All right.
So here we go. George from Tulsa commented on our recent post, "I Learned My Lesson Again," in which I describe the joys of buying a computer hardware built for Linux and what happens when you don't do that. So George writes, "I'm here to confess I recently gave up on my should-be infamous LG Gram and gifted it to my son-in-law who needs a personal Windows laptop. I've written about it in the Gram several times, reporting the speakers did/didn't work, and probably mentioning the similarly plagued keyboard backlight. Every so often it seemed to get fixed, and then the next kernel update would break one or both. One thing that never worked, neither the LG supplied USB-C to HDMI adapter, nor the Anker power delivery USB-C hub with HDMI output. The ability to connect to an external monitor would have been nice, but I needed the Gram for its convenient portability, not as a desktop replacement, and so that wasn't a deal breaker. The borkage which finally pushed me over the edge was when the backlight on the keyboard was disabled again. Frustratingly, the keyboard lit right up when the hardware booted and shut down when Linux started. No keystrokes or magic foo-foo got it to light again. As I was using the Gram in dim environments, that was a function I needed. The good news about putting Windows 11 back on a recent laptop is the Windows 11 key, and by the key, he's not talking about the Windows key on the keyboard, he's talking about the license key, should be burned into ROM. All I had to do to revert the Gram to Win 11 was boot it from the Windows 11 installer for the version that shipped with the laptop. That's different from Microsoft's old way, where the code for the Windows key might be on a tag, usually on the bottom of the computer, or on its external power supply. But here's a hint. Even if you think you really don't want to use Windows on a PC you buy intending to immediately wipe Windows and install Linux, go ahead and boot Windows to capture and safely store its Windows license key. Many websites offer instructions on how to do this, and here's one that's comprehensive. It's pretty long, so we'll include it in the show notes. I've been on there and read through it, and it turns out I used some of the tools they recommend, and I have found the Windows key on this HP Dragonfly. It's in the ROM somewhere. He continues, alternatively, if the boot drive in your new computer is removable, you could replace it with a new blank one and set aside the original drive in the event you want to revert the system to Windows or sell it with Windows as an option. It still took me a while to get the reinstall sorted because I didn't have a Windows PC to create the install thumb drive. The thumb drive I created using Mint's ISO to USB writer wouldn't work. Fortunately, I found WinDisk Writer, a Mac donationware application for creating Windows install media. WinDisk Writer did its job, and I was grateful. In spite of multiple tries over several days, I was unable to push a donation through its website. And we'll include the link to WinDisk Writer in the show notes. Thanks, George.
Yeah, thanks, George.
Our next email is from, I hope I get the name pronounced correctly, Guimar. He's seeking advice on Linux. Hi, gentlemen. I'm new to Linux and recently discovered your podcast. Thank you for creating such a helpful resource. My Linux journey started with an attempt to breathe new life into my 2014 MacBook Air, which is no longer supported by Apple. The hardware is still in great shape, so I wanted to avoid parting with it. Although I've heard of Linux before, I assumed it was beyond my skill level. My computer skills are basic. I'm comfortable navigating Apple and Microsoft environments and have built computers by following online guides, but I wouldn't call myself tech savvy. I tried installing Ubuntu 24.04 LTS on the MacBook, but ran into issues. While I successfully created a bootable USB stick, the installer doesn't detect my internal 128GB hard drive. It only shows the USB stick as an option for partitioning. I've wiped the MacBook clean and confirmed the hard drive works perfectly, but I keep hitting the same roadblock even when trying elementary OS. To continue exploring Linux, I picked up a 2021 Dell Latitude 7320 certified for Ubuntu 20.04 and installed Ubuntu 20.04 LTS without any issues. It's running well, though I've noticed slow wake times from sleep. Could this be a driver issue? Do you have any recommendations to address it? Additionally, as a beginner, are there any essential tweaks or setup steps you'd recommend after installing Linux? If there's a guide or resource for newbies like me, I'd appreciate being pointed in the right direction. Finally, do you have any advice for salvaging my 2014 MacBook Air? Was it unrealistic to expect it to handle the latest versions of Ubuntu? I know you're busy with the podcast and other podcasts, but if you have time to respond, I'd be incredibly grateful. Thanks for all that you do. I look forward to learning more about Linux through your podcast. Best regards, Guimar. Well, the Dell Latitude's a good choice. The slow boot up times, I'm thinking, Bill, that that's probably maybe something to do with the kernel, and you'll eventually get a new kernel through the software updater that might fix that problem, but it could also be a driver, like a video driver or something that is kind of stalling on getting started. Any thoughts from you or suggestions?
I was just thinking, is he hibernating it or?
Oh yeah, that could
just
be.
Put it in standby because he puts it hibernates a little bit slower coming out sometimes. The Dell, even though they're certified for Ubuntu, some the hibernate and suspend or even on the best of them are sometimes a hit or miss, you know, might be a little bit slower. I've seen, and it also depends on distributions. Like, I'll give you one that works almost 100% of the time, but they've done a lot of work. It's like Linux Mint's Restore They've and Hibernate, they've seemed to have gotten that down. I know they've been working on it, so I think it's just also could be a kernel. You know, 24.04 is an LTS, so they probably haven't pushed a new kernel. They are pushing now new kernels with hardware enablement. So as they push out new kernels, probably a lot of this stuff will be kind of fixed and tweaked. So I would, you know, it's slow. I would either just shut it down or just make sure you're not putting it in Hibernate. But the what is the other one called? Standby or whatever
suspend,
it's called.
Suspend, yeah.
Yeah, suspend. Because when you suspend, I believe it goes to the, it writes most of it to a memory. And I think Hibernate writes a lot of it to the disk.
Right, exactly.
So that it could also be that he doesn't have a very fast disk. If he has a spinning Rust, that could be a little bit of a slowdown too.
Yeah, you might think about replacing the hard drive with an SSD or something like that.
Yeah, if it's not an SSD.
Yeah, if it's not an SSD.
Now, the 2014 MacBook Air, that's an Intel-based chip, isn't it, Larry?
2014, yes, it would be.
Okay, so I would look at Ubuntu Mate for this one. I run Ubuntu Mate. I had remember that old big old Mac that I had back in the day, you know, the big one piece unit. It was like the iMac. It's Ubuntu Mate run really well on it. So you got that. And you can, you know, you can pick something a little closer to the Mac layout. I would not use Elementary OS 8. It's too plain Jane, and it's just not there yet. So look at Fedora for he sounds like he's pretty tech savvy, whether he so look at Fedora, because I know they do a lot of work in their bleeding edge. Look at Ubuntu Mate and look at Linux Mint. And if you want, look at Zorin OS. One of those will work on that MacBook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very interesting. Yeah. I know they're doing a lot of development for the newer MacBooks, you know, the chip that's in there, the ARM chip.
Asahi.
I don't know how much current work is being done on the Intel chip compatibility, but I know there.
It should work.
Yeah, it should work. And it may just be Ubuntu itself, the plain vanilla version of Ubuntu is an issue. And so, again, you might want to try those that Bill just recommended on that MacBook. Now, back to your Dell. If you're looking for support or documentation on Ubuntu, the Ubuntu website does have links to documentation. And they do have a very good manual. It's pretty much to get people started. But you might want to download that in its PDF form and just take a quick read through that. And another recommendation I can make, if you're going to be sticking with Ubuntu, which I would recommend you do for a little bit at least, you could go to Discourse, discourse.ubuntu.com. That's their community site. And there you can have text conversations with users of Ubuntu, with people on the Ubuntu project. Most Linux distributions have some sort of community site or community-supported site for this kind of thing, and Ubuntu is on discourse.ubuntu.com. So you can take a look there, and they may have links to other documents on specific topics. All right?
Yeah. Just a side note for everybody that's listening. Ventoy. Also, if you can use that to put a Windows image on from their site, if you need to have you know, you want to have a way you can boot in and use it, Ventoy works.
Mm-hmm.
So just a little side note, along with, because Ventoy, I got a bunch of stuff on the Ventoy, and it comes in handy.
Yeah, I have it as well.
Yep. So our next one comes from Roger, and he has information about Microsoft News for us. And he writes, "Hello, Larry and Bill. Roger here from Orange County, California, longtime listener, first time tattletale on Microsoft SolarWinds corruption of government security. Feel free to credit any part of ProPublica's news article below. Headline and parts are copied here," and he leaves us a link. And he says, "Following the series of government hacks, Biden closes out his administration with his new cybersecurity order. The executive order follows a ProPublica investigation that found Microsoft prioritized profit over security, leaving the federal government vulnerable to the latest hack in U.S. history. Vendors now demonstrate that their products are secure." And he writes, from Renee Dudley, on January 17, 2025, "Microsoft is not the only company whose products have provided hackers entry to government networks. Russian hackers in the SolarWinds attack gained access to victims' networks through tainted software updates provided by the Texas-based SolarWinds company before exploiting the flawed Microsoft product. By exploiting the weakness in the identity product during the SolarWinds attack, the Russian hackers were able to swiftly vacuum up emails from victim networks. In November, ProPublica reported that Microsoft capitalized on SolarWinds in the wake of the attack, offering federal agencies free trials of its cybersecurity products. This move effectively locked these agencies into a more expensive software licenses and vastly expanded Microsoft's footprint across the federal government."
Hmm.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, Microsoft acting in a, you know, from a profit motive. Yeah.
I've heard about this story, and I've actually read a little bit more than this, and this is kind of, it's kind of not super old or anything, but it was, they said, "Let us offer you this free stuff." Mm-hmm. And but they didn't say that it's going to lead to more money from them. So it's a proprietary company locking in customers that, "Yeah, hey, look how wonderful this is." And then now they've sunk the hook, so you have to stay there because, you know. Yeah. But Microsoft is charging for, like, there's some still companies that are using older Microsoft operating systems.
Mm-hmm.
They need to have the old stuff running. Well, we have some products that can help you stay secure, but you got to pay for it. So if this is a lot of this is covered, and I'm going to give it a shout out because I've really been listening to it, is Security Now.
Mm-hmm.
With Steve Gibson. He does a good job of breaking down a lot of these stories, and some of them are just fascinating about how he doesn't pull any punches. So it's very interesting if you're interested in the cybersecurity angle. It's well above what I know, and probably, Larry's a lot more technical savvy than 99% of the people I know. So he might. But Security Now is really, really a good one. And I think that Steve Gibson pretty much lives and breathes it. That's his thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've listened to him in the past, and he's pretty much Windows-focused, right?
So he is Windows-focused, yes.
But he's a good source of technical information regardless. And if you are using Windows, he's even more valuable to you.
Yeah, and you need to know if you're interested in tech, you want to see what's happening in the tech fields and other, I mean, he doesn't just talk about Windows, he talks about other attacks too. And it's, and, but he does focus on Windows. He's very brilliant and I think he's very sincere. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, that's one I can hardly recommend.
Yeah. Good. Well, let's move on to our next email from George from Tulsa. So he also commented on our last listener feedback episode. He says, I'm late to the party, just catching up with December 2nd's 462 listener feedback. After reading my email about having stacked NUC form factor Ryzen 7 and Mac Mini M2, Bill astutely noted doing that might create a heat problem. The ARM M2 Mini does have a fan, but runs cool. The Mini's forum, Ryzen 7, runs much hotter and has vents on top, bottom, and side, and a large circumference of fans that is effectively as silent as the Mini. I'd foreseen the heat issue and stacked two systems by placing them on stacked stands. These Bontechs are currently $24.99 on Amazon. We'll have a link to that Amazon offer with the two-pack of the stacked monitor stands. He continues, what I hadn't anticipated is how much they'd help reduce clutter and gain desk space. I bought another brand that can provide more height between the levels. The Fullerton ones are $26.99, also on Amazon, also link in the show notes, and they're a good bit higher for sure. Taking a look at the pictures he sent us, you can see them on Amazon. This is not a pretty picture, but I still find joy in a UPS, two bay Synology NAS, network switch, their power supplies and accessories, including frequently used cables and battery power packs. They're all stacked in a corner of my work surface instead of devouring desk space. This is the Fullerton, which enables more space between shelves. The handy attached pockets I filled up with stuff come with the purchase. I regret I don't have a photo of the stacked M2 Mini and Ryzen. I dismantled that setup when I got a new M4 Mini that's now successfully running the Linux software I used in the UTM virtual machine, as I reported in a November 25 email. That's November 25th, not November of 2025. We're not there yet. He, I don't think, is capable of time travel. But anyway, thanks, George.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
I was looking at the pictures. Sorry, you got me looking at the pictures going, oh, that.
Yeah, they do look pretty cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, those M2s are... I want an M2. I want a Snapdragon. Can you make that happen, Larry? I want to play with one.
Yeah, sure. I'll take it out of your salary.
Okay. Well, great. Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. So our next email comes from George again, and he wrote, "Work update my Mac to a new M4 Mini. The new base M4 Minis now come standard with 16 GB of RAM. Mine is upgraded to a 512 GB SSD. These computers, like all Apple's models, are running ARM-based Apple Silicon processors fabbed by TSMC. The M4 chips use TSMC's company's latest 3-nanometer process. The new Minis are much smaller than the form factor that's been used since 2010. The base model has two USB 3.1 ports and a headphone jack on the front. That's a change from the previous model, which had a blank front and ports only on the back. The back of the new Mini has three Thunderbolt 4 USB 4 ports, a standard 1 GB Ethernet port, and per third-party reviews, an HDMI 2.1 port. The M4 is noticeably snappier than the M2's Mini. it's replacing. While it has a fan, I have never heard it run. The only one I've bought is slightly discounted to $744 on Amazon from Apple's $799 list. This considerably more powerful M4 Pro that comes standard with more processor cores, 24 gigabytes of RAM, the 512 gigabyte SSD, and Thunderbolt 5 instead of a Thunderbolt 4 lists for $1,399 and is currently offered for $1,329 on Amazon. As to the UTM virtual machine, when I last reported the Debian 12 ARM-based UTM virtual machine I had installed on my M2 died when a Debian update failed. In my troubleshooting efforts, I suspected it failed because I had not updated the underlying UTM virtual machine software. This time I paid $10 to the Mac App Store for the version which automatically updates and pays to support the UTM developers. After installing the Mac App Store UTM, I then downloaded the UTM Turnkey Debian 12 Rosetta VM, unzipped the download to the Mac's app folder, created a folder named Debian Share and Documents, and was off to work. It's really fast, very slick, shares an integrated clipboard with the Mac software, and will be a great productivity enhancement, presuming it keeps working. That's a lot of stuff. I'm still trying to process all that. That's a lot of money for only 16 gigs of RAM. I know it's different, but it just doesn't seem like enough. You know, 24 gigabyte and a 512 gigabyte SSD seems a little slow. I mean, I'm not knocking it. I mean, they're fast. I've played with one. They're nice. I mean, we both have iPhones, and just, you know, the way things are, but it just seems like you could get more bang for the buck with a Linux system like System 76 or Framework or Tuxedo Computers or any of those.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just, I don't know. Don't mind me. I was just trying to put all that. It's like you have to pay to use the ARM. Okay.
It's the Apple tax.
Yeah. It's the uptake. George, thanks for that information. Like I said, that's a lot of information, and that's good information, so thank you very much. And it's very interesting that the TSMC is already at 3-nanometer process, so wow.
Yeah, TSMC, those unfamiliar, is Taiwan Semiconductor. They're making chips for Intel now.
Well, not all of them, are they? They still have the fabs?
Yeah, they have some fab, but I think they're switching to Taiwan and have switched, but I don't know. I'm not keeping up on that.
They make the Snapdragons too, don't
they? Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, because I played with Snapdragon, and they're really... of course, it was Windows-based because I haven't been able to get my hands on a Linux-based one. Mm-hmm. But the chip is fascinating. It was super quiet, super slim, and super fast. Even using this emulation layer, and it's amazing. You know, it used to be that though as much power wasn't a concern, and now you've got the power is a concern with power and stuff. So ARM chips and the M2 chips and even the new Intel chips, it's amazing what they're able to do. But you know what I found interesting, and then I'll move on. Intel has taught this thing, the only way to get their newer chips to the efficiency and features of like the M chips and the Snapdragon is to lose some of that old 32-bit support. You know, they need to just say, it's just not going to support it anymore. We got to move on.
Yeah.
You know, so they're talking about taking some of that stuff. Is like, why are we still doing this? We're just going to have to make the cut. We can't keep carrying this legacy. And so it was just interesting.
Yeah, that's all. Absolutely. Well, thanks, George.
Thanks, George.
Yeah. So Harry has our next email, and he shares his decision. Dear Larry and Bill, about 4 years ago, I was wetting my feet with Linux using Ubuntu 18.04 on a Linux desktop and an older laptop. My family revolted, so the Windows machine remained in use. The laptop had issues with an Ubuntu update. A friend recommended Mint Cinnamon, and for the last 2 years, I've been using MX XFCE. There were no issues with Mint or MX. The Windows machine has been in use from Windows 8.1 and cannot update to Windows 11. Time to make a decision. Brought the Linux machine back to life with a new hard drive with POP 22.04 and now waiting on additional drives to expand the storage. Goodbye, Windows. First, starting with a little knowledge and switching distros in the heat of excitement was a big mistake. The best advice received years ago was from the Going Linux show, learn the command line and become proficient with your distro. Thanks, Meyer. Now, the email address said Harry, and he signed it Meyer, so whatever. Thanks, whoever you are. Yeah, thanks for letting us know, and congratulations on the success.
Yes. Congratulations and good luck.
Yeah.
You'll get a few more years out of that.
Yeah, you bet.
All right. So our next one comes from Ambrose. And he wrote, Going Linux starring Bill Smith. Oh, hi, Larry.
Okay. There you go.
It's a inside joke. Anyway. To the many people in your audience wondering why I go by the name Ambrose, no one is, but humor me, do a Google image search on Ambrose the Penguin. Good night and good luck. Ambrose the Penguin, Engineer Minion, Min Inch Plus. You should do Minion certifications.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You're so killing me, Ambrose.
He's certified Min Inch Plus. Okay.
Yes, that's good. I like that. Yeah. He is our engineer minion, so.
Yes. Ambrose was prolific about his feedback over the past month, and he wrote again with an email he entitled Response to Feedback. To, all right, Larry and Bill. Geez, you guys are so touchy about this. I've been away from the podcast for a while, so there are a few things I wanted to comment on. One, belated thanks to Biku for the excellent DigitalOcean article on SSDs. It was very helpful. Two, one minor thing to consider when using XFAT for VeraCrypt containers. I don't use Windows, so using a Linux file system means that whoever steals my container will have to use Linux to get it. Yes, a motivated attacker probably won't have much problem, but since most people use Windows, it's one more roadblock for them. Three, to Robert's question on kernel headers. Most of the kernel is written in C. The C language has a facility to include other files within a source.c module. So if you look at most C source files, you will see several pound, octothorpe, hash. Yeah, let's go with hash. Several hash include files at the top. If you write the Hello World program, you will see the line hash include, open angle bracket, or don't have to download the source for the libraries, but you do have to get the library headers before you build. So all the declarations and memory addresses are the same as in the library. Phew. I don't know how well I explained this. I also don't know how well it plays on audio podcasts, but there you have it. Good night and good luck, Ambrose. Wow. One little question about the kernel, and Ambrose writes a whole lot about how to do programming in C. in the kernel. So
my brain's hurting.
Yeah, I know. But he's not finished.
Nope. So Ambrose followed up. Did we happen to point out that Ambrose is our minion engineer? Just want to point that out.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's just go with gentlemen. In my last email, I tried to clarify what kernel headers are. After rereading it, I think my answers were unclear, especially for those who haven't done much C programming. I'd prefer it if you didn't read the original and let me try to give you a better answer.
Well, Ambrose, we'll read both just for you.
Yeah, because you are the minion engineer and you have to work on your minion certification. So, moving on. Now my brain's really going to hurt after this. An application written in C is usually made up of several .c files that are compiled and linked together to form an executable. These files contain lots of variables and functions. In C, before you can use a variable or call a function, it must be declared. For a variable, this means declaring its data type. For a function, the declaration describes the parameters and their data types and the data type of the return value of the function. In any .c file that calls a particular function, the function declaration has to appear at the head of the file before the call. Retyping the declaration in every such .c file could lead to a lot of repeated typing and subsequent mistakes. So the declarations are put in .h files and are included in any .c file that calls that function. That way, you only type them once. Should the function declaration change, all .c files calling the function would have to be recompiled to get the new declaration. Otherwise, the application won't build. These .h files are called the headers. The kernel is just another C program, and it has lots of .c and .h files. When a new version of the kernel is released, a lot of the .h files, the kernel headers, will have changed. There's usually something on your system that needs to see the new declarations and be rebuilt. This is where my knowledge gets a bit sketchy. Since I don't know what all needs rebuilding, it may vary depending on the distro, but you may need to have the new kernel.h's on your system to do the rebuilding. This might be way more than anyone asked for, but I think this might be a clearer exploration. Hope it helps. Good night and good luck, Ambrose.
Yeah, since your explanation was about half as long, and it was considerably clearer,
My brain's still hurting.
Your brain's still hurting. Yeah, well, you're not a programmer, so hey, there you go.
I'm looking at all this, and I'm like, okay, yeah. That was like Latin to me. Ambrose, can you dumb this down any more for me? I mean, I need like the second grade level of this. I mean, let's go back to kindergarten. Holy moly, Ambrose. You've earned your engineering certification type 1, 2, and 3. Congratulations.
There you go. Yeah. Wow. So yeah, thanks, Ambrose. You're right. It was way more than anybody asked for, but for those in our audience that are way more technical than any of the rest of us, and our programmers, this will make some sense. I know enough about programming to understand what he's saying. Not that I've done any of this, but I do understand what he's talking about. And it is, it seems pretty clear to me. Now, is it factually correct? I have to assume, since, Ambrose is a certified minion engineer. I'm sure he's correct in all fronts. But yes, thanks for clarifying it and simplifying it. And that just shows that you need to revise, you know, make a second revision of whatever you write out, because you can usually make it clearer the second time. And you've done it, Ambrose. Thank you.
Yeah. Ambrose, seriously, that was really a great write-up. I got about 10% of that, but I kind of understand where you were going with it, but it was still gobbledygook to me. So I think I need to start learning some programming, because I can't even keep up with Ambrose. I have to go and sit in the corner and rock a little bit, but I'll figure it out.
Okay. Well, while you do that, you can take a little break. There are two more emails to go. I'll read the first and you can get the second. How's that?
Okay.
Okay. Costas wrote us about the Ubuntu Mate installer. Hi, guys. Big fan and great show. I've been listening to you many years now. I'm an on and off Linux user since Ubuntu 20.04. But to be quick, I listened to your last show and acted like a new user from Windows. Then went to your new site, very good, by the way, read the article about Windows 10 upgrade to Ubuntu Mate, and went to nuke and pave Windows from my machine to install Mate. The installer crashed again. Now, I should say that about 6 months ago, I tried to install Mate again. Then the installer crashed every single time. Now, 6 months after, and while some new users may try that, you know what will happen. Is the state of Mate so bad that they don't even bother to fix that? Those are the things that are happening, and the year of Linux will never happen. Just a friendly rant from a fan of Linux and your podcast. Thank you very much for the time. Keep up the good work, Costas. Okay, so you've had some problems installing Ubuntu Mate. 20.04, I don't remember being a problem release. So I'm thinking, what hardware are you installing this on? Maybe there's some incompatibility that's causing it to fail. Lots of people are using it. Lots of people have installed it without any crashing problems. And I haven't seen enough reports about Ubuntu Mate causing a crash on install in version 20.04, and especially on even more recent releases. So any thoughts from you, Bill, as to why Custis may be having this problem with Ubuntu Mate installer?
I've been having problems with some of the Ubuntu flavors, and I found maybe something that will help. They rewrote their installer in Flutter, I believe it's called. When you start it up, before you start to install, it will say this installer can be updated. Do you want to do that?
Yes.
Always, always, always do that.
Yeah.
Because what happens, things change or they found something. So when you update it, it'll say update and it'll say complete. It says then close it and reopen it, and it will use the new information that you downloaded. And I found that has fixed about 90% of the issues I was having with things crashing.
Mm-hmm.
And when also if when you're using the new installer, it'll give you the option to use like experimental ZFS and LVMM and all that. I would make sure my installer is updated, and I would just let it default to whatever it wants to use. I wouldn't go changing the file types, because it'll most of the times it says experimental. But the biggest thing is always, 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 without a doubt, if it gives you the option to update the installer for Ubuntu Mate, Ubuntu, or any of the others, always do that. And that will solve, I think, a good part of your problems.
Yeah, good point. I had forgotten about the update the installer bit. I think that is exactly what you need. So give that a try with the more recent versions of Ubuntu Mate or Ubuntu or any of the Ubuntu flavors. I think they all have it, and it's definitely worth it for sure.
Yeah, it only takes a. It took a, I think like a, when I was testing it out, it was like an extra 2 minutes to download it.
Yeah,
and it just made everything better. So, just a point that might come in handy. All right. So our next one comes from Russ, who commented on Snaps. Hi, Bill and Larry. I recently moved off of using Snaps on Ubuntu, not for any particular reason. I recommend the deb, git, and pakstall. Both are scripts for helping get packages that you'd otherwise use Snaps or Flatpaks for. Deb-git behaves like apt and was written by Martin Wimpress. It's great for pulling in different PPAs as well as deb files from the release pages of projects on GitHub. It has a bunch of packages already, but it's pretty fast to add packages for it to manage. Pakstall is a script that builds packages from source and is meant to behave like the AUR on Arch. Both are good for getting packages that only provide a tarball or deb file and don't have a PPA available. If you don't have an issue with Flatpaks, there's also a script by Alan Pope, which I forget the name of, which will migrate all of your snap packages over to corresponding Flatpaks. Thanks, Gus. Thanks, Gus.
Yeah. And I think Russ was on his email address. So, Russ or Gus? I know, Gus, you've sent us emails before. Okay, I lied. There were three additional emails, and here's the third one. Ian has a suggestion for remote access. I think combining Tailscale with Sunshine and Moonlight streaming would work. Sunshine is the equivalent of self-hosted GeForce, now streaming supporting all graphics chips for hardware transcoding, Moonlight being the client and using Tailscale for the connection between computers. You can use it to easily stream a Windows desktop to any computer. Plus, it allows the client and server to both use the desktop at the same time. Okay, Ian, I'll take your word for it that this is,
yes.
Another suggestion that may not be simpler, but it sounds, we'll take your word that it works. I'm not going to try it. I'm happy with it.
My brain's still hurting from Ambrose. I can't try anything right now.
There you go. All right. Well, Bill, I think we're finished. We had a lot of email to catch up on.
Stuff.
Yeah. But it's good. It is good. Yes.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yep. Okay, so our next episode is TBD. I don't know what that stands for, but we'll decide later. It's to be decided.
Yeah.
Until then, go to our website at goinglinux.com for articles and show notes, as well as links to download and subscribe. We provide the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
And if you like, you can participate directly with our friendly and helpful community members by joining the discussion in our Going Linux podcast community on community.goinglinux.com.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.